is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. A new study shows extreme weather disproportionately affects small farms, and Wisconsin has thousands. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
Researchers at the University of Illinois studied milk production records from 9 Midwest dairy farms. Considering both temperature and humidity when measuring extreme heat, they found farms lose about 1% of milk yield annually because of heat stress, while smaller farms lose closer to 2%. Study co-author Marin Skidmore says when cows are in extreme heat, it can cause increased restlessness and risk of infection and decreased appetite, which reduces milk yield and impacts bottom lines.
To some extent, it's only 1.6%, but if you're really making every dollar from your paycheck count because you're living in a time with high costs, then 1.6% of your paycheck being gone in a given year is meaningful.
The study predicts extreme heat days to be more frequent in years to come and milk yield losses to increase about 30% in the next 25 years. The Midwest tends to have smaller dairy farms compared with other states, with herds ranging from 100 to 200 cows. Researchers say being able to track and compare daily milk yields across a large region with similar climates has never been done before. Skidmore says their findings suggest that larger herds seem to have some level of protection to extreme heat compared with smaller farms, which start to see impacts of heat stress at lower thresholds. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
The Brewers win the series. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 5-1 win over the Tigers today in Milwaukee. A good performance by starter Jose Quintana. Last night, 24-year-old Quinn Priester tossed a shutout. Pat Murphy on the crew's scouting department.
You know, it's hats off to them for finding a guy in AAA that can come and give us two pretty good outings so far. And looks like he's a lot to work with and great kid and competitor. And seems like, once again, they strike again. Matt Arnold and his posse.
NBA, the Bucks holding practice, getting ready for Saturday's playoff game at noon against the Pacers. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers have lost their starting left tackle for the season due to a torn ACL. Head coach Luke Fickell. Fickell on tackle Kevin Haywood.
Obviously, I think he's going to have surgery, so it's probably going to lose him and probably not going to get him back, obviously, even for the season. So that was one that's going to be really difficult and tough. But, you know, it's also a part of the game.
That's the Badgers' Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Sunny, seasonal, calm, and comfortable today with high temperatures scraping the low 60s. With more clouds filtering in tonight and winds becoming breezy, we will be windy and warmer tomorrow, with high temperatures making it to the mid-60s and some showers and storms rolling through in the evening. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 55 degrees.
When we got our home appraised, we felt robbed. Compared to a similar home right around the corner, our appraisal was $80,000 less.
Latino and Black homeowners are about twice as likely as white homeowners to get low appraisals. If you believe your home has been unfairly appraised because of race or national origin, contact HUD at hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Everyone has a right to fair housing. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll talk issues that matter to you with State Senator Sarah Kieski and also Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich. Also, the NFL draft of the Packers. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays noon till 2. News from the Center. WRCE.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Wednesday. It's 3 p.m., and that means it is time for Broad Appeal, a little segment we have so dubbed because we generally talk to fabulous broads, and I mean that in the most amazing sense possible. We are retaking that word, and because women elected officials have broad appeal, we get it done. I've got one such fabulous female elected official. Her name is Karen DeSanto. She is a Wisconsin Assemblywoman for District 40 out of Baraboo, South Central Wisconsin area, just outside of Madison. Welcome, Karen. I have been so excited to talk with you, and especially about your work in the assembly, but how you bring your past experience to that work especially. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you. It is so awesome. I love that you use the word broad, because when we talk about my previous experience, we were all circus broads. That's what we were. That was us, you know, circus girls, broads, ladies, women, all of it. And the love women it. Really held the show together. So I'm with you, girlfriend. There's some amazing ladies around us.
I love it. I have to give credit where it is due. I once was in a group, and I'm probably going to botch what the numerical portion of the name one was, but it was, I think it was called like 65 broads or something like that. What it referred to was a bunch of women who worked at Goldman Sachs on Broad Street in New York. That was the address of the GS building there. And so they were trying to take that, and it had this double entendre. And I've always, whenever anybody's called me a broad, I've always been like, hell yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I like to
me
kick
too.
A little butt and get things done. So I'll take
bring
that.
Bring it. Well, back in the day, you know, of vaudeville, they were all broads. They were stage broads, right? And they held it together. And there's nothing better than a funny female.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, which is, of course, yeah. So here's the fun fact. So here I sit, look at my office. I've got my flags. I'm in my my rep office here. But previous to this, I held a lot of jobs. And one of those big life-changing things for me was the day that I put in an application to go to Clown College for Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Clown College. And lo and behold, I got accepted. And then the next part of that, answering yes to that, was going to Clown College right here in Baraboo, Wisconsin. At Service
of course,
Museum.
Yes.
First time I ever. Yeah, it's wild. It's so wild, the full circle of everything. And then for 25 years, I traveled the world performing with not only Ringling Brothers, but then I went into directing and producing and performing still. But I've traveled the world as a circus clown.
So did you have a particular bit as a clown representative?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So my husband and I were known. So we put together entree gags. So we became headliner clowns. So although we were part of an alley or a group of clowns, as we call them in Clown Alley, we also had our own routines. And that's where producers from all over the world would see our work and then specifically ask for us to do, can you do this gag? Can you do that gag? And so we were very physical. We were very messy. We did a lot of, and in our world of soap gags. So lots of soap suds in the middle of the ring, which is, you know,
entertaining,
fun for us. And the audience seems to really love it.
That is just amazing. As someone who did a little bit of theater and who was a performing violinist for many years,
Look at you, me too.
Right? Hi, Fran. I have such admiration for people that can handle doing really hardcore physical comedy. I have tried. It's really difficult to pull off and actually make the comedic element work. So that is just so cool. But you had a quote, big kid job for a number of years. You were the CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Southwestern Wisconsin. Tell us about that, because it seems to me like there's a pretty clear through line between entertaining families and getting kids engaged to your work with the Boys and Girls Club. Tell us a little bit about it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for asking. Boy, I've been so blessed in my career that these doors of opportunity open for me. And then I say yes, you know, to go into them. So, I was a CEO of Boys and Girls Club, West Central Wisconsin, not South Central, but West Central Wisconsin, where, it was exactly that, taking care of kids and families and making sure our education systems are strong, these supports are there. What can we do? And should it be work? Yes. But should it be fun? Absolutely. And Boys and Girls Clubs, you know, the first word in our business plan is fun. It's where kids can go be kids, but be taken care of, well cared for, mentored through hard times. And as we know, our kids go through a lot these days. It's not like it was when you and I were younger, right? So really a great boy. I look back and just think everything that I've done working with Circus certainly prepared me for working with, over 1,000 Boys and Girls Clubbers, as well as staff. And super proud of my tenure with Boys and Girls Club. I started in Baraboo with one club. We got a sister club in Toma, so in Monroe County area. And because our clubs were so good, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, our clubs were great, you know, and through the state, there's a lot of great clubs, but in rural areas too, that's really significant.
They serve such a critical role.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's not, we don't have the ability to have a lot of opportunity often in smaller rural towns. So over my tenure of 12 years, we grew from two clubs and about a $600,000 budget to four clubs, 14 centers, and a $1.5 million budget. So, and all serving kids, I mean, and just doing the right thing. You know, I certainly didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have you just get it done, right?
Women get it done.
Yeah. And surround yourself with really great people that help you get it done, that believe in the mission, you know? And then I retired. I was like, look at me, I'm going to retire. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I'm going to figure it out. And so then I ran for office. So apparently I'm not very good at retiring.
No, that's the one thing. Circus clown, check. Running a huge Boys and Girls Club operation, check. Retiring, not so much. Karen DeSanto's
not so good.
Bag.
Not good.
Folks,
but
if you're just...
I love his job, though, Maggie. I'll tell you that. I love being here. I love it.
I'm so glad you're there to shake things up, to tell people the hard truths, to brook no BS. It is deeply needed everywhere in politics. If you're just joining us, folks, we got Representative Karen DeSanto from Assembly District 40 in West Central Wisconsin. We've been talking about your background because it leads me to the discussion about the threats to education public education, especially here in the state of Wisconsin. As we enter, as you enter into the biennial budget fight with the GOP here in Wisconsin, what are you looking for from our state's budget in terms of education funding? What do you think we need to be pushing more dollars into? And what are your thoughts regarding potentially the dismantling of the federal Department of Education, which continues to baffle me?
Oh, Maggie, it right? I mean, just really think of that. What you just asked, it's just, it's crazy. So lots of things. I think our public education system is under attack, quite frankly. And it's not by the Assembly Democrats. And I believe that our kids, our teachers, you know, the sanctity of being a teacher these days has been eroded into some almost, dare I say, like a demonized role. Like suddenly our teachers are supposedly, you know, doing awful things to kids other than teaching them, right? So I believe our public education system should be the thing that we point to as Wisconsinites, that this is our gem. This is our value system, is educating our youth to the best of our ability, not the worst of. And that means that we fund it properly, for crying out loud. So for years, you know, we've looked at a decade, maybe more, of underfunding our schools. So you wonder why. Like now, in this, just this last election, there was there's a number. I have numbers that my beautiful staff shared with me. 241 referendums. So you wonder why.
241. Yes. We have reached a point in time in this state where we have historic numbers on every single elections in every single cycle to fund our public schools. I'm sorry to jump in, but I think it's a point that needs emphasis.
No, I appreciate that. You're absolutely right. That should be a trigger flag to all of us to go, what is happening? What is the problem? Where have we strayed? And we've strayed because we have underfunded our public education system for a decade or more. So now what we're asking is the good citizens who live in our towns and our cities to basically up their tax rate so that we can afford a referendum to support our schools, which our tax rates go to. It's just a circular motion.
Yep.
On top of all this, and I would be remiss if I didn't say it, the secondary problem that we're looking at is this voucher system.
Yes.
So our voucher system is just the other side of the aisle's way to defund public education.
Yep. Defund public education.
That's what we're doing. And that's what we see on the federal level. They're dismantling the Department of Education so they can continue to grow privatization of schools, which is all the things. I think it's
That's the end game, clearly.
Right.
And it will have increasingly segregationist impacts.
Of course.
Right.
By design.
Correct. We're going to talk more about that very thing. The future of vouchers. Keep in mind, folks, that Tim Michaels ran for governor on a platform of universal vouchers, which is the end game. Defund public education, give everybody, no matter what your income, Jeff Bezos's kids, Elon Musk's kids, they get vouchers and taxpayer-funded private education that may be religious or not, or who knows. We're going to talk more with Representative Karen DeSanto from Assembly District 40. We're so happy to have her representing us in Madison. When we return after these brief messages, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Day one, the hardest day, the day you hear.
This is a type of blood cancer.
But day one is just one day. At the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, we are here to help you move past day one.
On day 45, I discovered an online community who shared great tips for in-treatment care.
I missed a lot of school during treatment, and LLS helped me keep up.
To learn more and get help on day 2, day 28, or any day, please visit lls.org or call 1-800-955-4572.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that, where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabe, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This half hour, we're talking with Wisconsin Representative Karen DeSanto. She represents Assembly District 40 out of Baraboo. We've been talking about education, Representative, and I am apoplectic would be a word that we have somehow decided to vilify teachers and believe Robin Voss's lies. Like, I don't get it. He gave an interview about, I don't know, 2 months ago or so, where he said, we've made a generational investment in public schools. No, you didn't. You, Robin Voss and Scott Walker, architected the most massive defunding of public education in Wisconsin's modern history. It's just on both scale and percentage wise. And these improvements that Tony Evers, Governor Evers, has been able to make in partnership with Democrats in the assembly have been simply to staunch the bleed. Now it's going to be even more complicated if Trump is successful in dismantling the Department of Education. It's going to be even more complicated for schools to get the funding they need to support students that voucher schools can turn away and discriminate against, which includes students with individualized education plans. Right. Do you know someone who is on the spectrum, a kid that has special needs? Guess what? They don't have to be accepted to voucher schools. If we voucherize the whole damn thing, who's taking your child or the you love or mentor or see in church or in the grocery store? Who's taking care of that kid? Thank you for bringing this up, Karen, because I don't get it. I do not understand.
I can see it. Right. None of us do. And I love that you are right on the money. There are so many things that I just think the people do not understand what is truly happening. They don't understand that our public schools physically write a check out of their general fund to these private schools to support these kids, that these private education systems don't have the same standards and criteria that our public schools are required to follow. And you're right, especially our kids with individualized learning programs, right? So anybody, sure, they can go to any school they want. They send them that check. And then you know what happens? They don't have a service because they are not required to have a speech pathologist.
Correct.
Or an occupational therapist or a reading specialist.
Nor do they have to take the same testing standards or do the same reporting or come up with a reading and literacy plan for kids that are behind. And so, you know, like you got DOGE running around with a bunch of post-pubescent boys that know nothing about government searching high and low for claimed fraud, waste, and abuse. I got an idea for them. I'll tell you where there's a bunch of leakage of tax dollars that are getting misspent with no accountability and no auditing. Voucher schools. There are no standards. There are very low fiscal accountability. There's no nationalized system of auditing these things. You want to be concerned about ineffective government programs? Look at voucher and charter programs.
Follow the money. Follow the money. So here's what I've heard from my constituents that have been, it's hard to have a young person or a child in your family that needs extra help, right? It's hard. It is difficult on parents, especially single parent families. So when these schools come around, they said, hey, you know what? Your son could do a real good job over here at my school. Come over there. Of course, parents are like, thank you. We need that support. We need that respite, right? Then what happens is little Johnny goes over to that school and they don't have the supports that he needs to thrive and to be successful. So they say, oh, mom, I'm so sorry, but Johnny isn't doing well here. He's probably going to have to go back to his other school. But they keep the money.
Right.
So all the money for that child stays with that school. So Johnny goes back to public education and now they have to, by law, give him the supports that he needs. So now we're running a deficit. And this is what I'm saying. Now we run deficits. All our schools are experiencing that exact scenario.
And it's worse. It's harder in rural school districts.
Absolutely.
Too. It's the bigger your school district. So like Milwaukee, they at least have scale. They can absorb some of that. But you move into those more rural districts and it's a real hard situation for folks. We got a couple of our loyal listeners. Let's take one of their comments or calls. We've got Ruth from Eau Claire, a new-ish caller. Hello, Ruth. Please say hello to Representative DeSanto. What is your comment or question this afternoon?
Hello. It's both of you, and I appreciate it. Oh, and the guest. And my daughter says me too, someone who went through special education and really benefited from it. And I certainly want other young parents to benefit from that. I am calling, though, that I'm looking for another voice. I'm looking for, like, the hope, the direction, embracing what we have. I know there's a lot to react to right now, but it's so reactionary, and I'm just...
Oh, wait. I'm so sorry, Ruth, we lost you. Let me give you some hope. Karen DeSanto is now in the Wisconsin Assembly. We have fairer maps. We are going to continue to have fairer maps in the state of Wisconsin because Susan Crawford was just elected to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We have a chance coming up in just a couple years to replace an ideologue on our Supreme Court with someone who will follow the law, that understands we all deserve equal protection under the law. Every day is an opportunity for us to speak up, not just to react, but to advocate for the positive change that we need to see. We have a governor who cares deeply about these issues, who's trying to invest not just more in education, but more in children's mental health. Mm-hmm. Representative DeSanto, with our last minute, what do you say to Ruth out there to give her some hope about moving forward?
Absolutely. And Ruth, thank you. Don't lose hope. All the things Maggie just mentioned are right on fire. We do have a pathway. And one of the first bits of legislation that your Assembly Democrats put forward is the Lowering Cost, Improving Lives package. That includes creating food for all kids, lunches. And I mean, if you pare it down, it's just simple, basic facts, simple, basic needs. Food for all kids, boom, makes a better school day. Expansion of the homestead tax credit, great for families, lower income families, and last, lowering prescription costs for all families so you can get the prescriptions that you need. But that is what our Democrats are doing for our state.
Thank you so much, Representative Karen DeSanto. We're going to take Maryland Senator's comments about Abrigo Garcia next.
News from the Center, WRCE.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
President Trump's tariffs are a continuing topic in U.S. agriculture, both for and against. Trump says the tariffs are in place to even out a significant U.S. ag trade imbalance with other countries. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report, and Pat Westhoff, director of the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, says the significant ag trade deficit is a real thing.
Yeah, we do have a trade deficit overall in the U.S. economy, and we also have a trade deficit in agricultural and food products. The deficit in agriculture and food products is a story of very different worlds. On the one hand, we have a big surplus in major commodities like wheat, corn, soybeans, cotton, pork, and many other products. But we have a deficit in things like fruits, vegetables, and many processed products. So again, those have impacts on different parts of U.S. agriculture, and trying to address that deficit is a high priority of the current administration.
Once again, that's Pat Westhoff, director of the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, along with us. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
Pause for a moment of clean row calm, brought to you by Storin Corn Herbicide. Preserve this moment of weed-free serenity at storinwontquit.com or see your Syngenta retailer today. Always read and follow label instructions.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 484 and a quarter. That was up 3 cents. New crop corn closed at 466 and three quarters, up 2.5 cents. Cash beans closed at 1038 and three quarters. That was up 2 3/4. And new crop beans closed at 1034 and a quarter, up 4.5 cents. And July wheat closed at 561, up 5 cents. On the dairy side of things, May Class 3 milk contract is trading at 1781 a hundredweight. That is down 27 cents. And June milk is trading at 1713 a hundredweight, and that is down 37 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 187.5. That was down 2.5 cents. 40-pound black cheese closed at 182.5. That was up 2.5. And the double A butter closed down a penny today and closed at 234. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Sunny, seasonal, calm, and comfortable today with high temperatures scraping the low 60s. With more clouds filtering in tonight and winds becoming breezy, we will be windy and warmer tomorrow, with high temperatures making it to the mid-60s and some showers and storms rolling through in the evening. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 55 degrees.
Milwaukee Brewer Baseball on WRCE is brought to you by Walsh's Ace Hardware, Richland Electric, Meister Log and Lumber Company, The Shoebox, Napa Auto and Truck Parts, Jones Chevrolet, Pratt Funeral Service, Pappas' Trading Post, Clary Memorial Funeral and Cremation Service, Community First Bank, A&W Restaurant, Benson Insurance, Schmidt Woodland Hills, Bailey Paint, Julie Karen State Farm, Meyer Oil and LP, Sunshine and Giggles, and Cardinal CG.
Every year, millions of pets go missing, leaving families heartbroken. If you lose or find a pet, Love Lost is here to help. Our free, easy-to-use platform uses photo-matching technology across multiple media platforms to bring lost pets home. Just upload a photo and quickly search the largest national lost and found pet database. Let's unite to reunite, because every lost pet deserves to find their way home. Register today at lovelost.com.
Earl Ingram.
Tomorrow on The Earl Ingram Show, we'll be giving a cheerful farewell to Dr. Omar, the pharmacist. It's been an amazing journey, but this is not the end. He'll still be involved in my podcast down the line.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings at 9.
How's everybody doing? Happy hump day. We're going to get to some over the hump and Trump positive things in a bit. If you want to get some of your thoughts ready, here's the question of the afternoon for your participation in this fine program, 855-752-4842. What was the thing that you liked best about your college town if you attended university? Or if you didn't go to university or college, that's fine too. What do you think makes a great college town? I've gone to two universities, so I had very, very different experiences at both. We'll talk a little bit about that. 855-752-4842. What do you think makes a great college town? If you went to university or college and loved your experience, what made your college town fabulous? What do you think the best college town in Wisconsin is? 855-752-4842. If you're new to the show, we do a bit of lightness at the end of our Wednesday show. We call it Over the Hump and Trump. But ladies and gentlemen, we have to talk about something extremely important. I have been discussing it all week. And last week, there has been some breaking news in two fronts, in two different cases that all relates to Donald Trump's unconstitutional denial of due process to nearly 250 people. It's unconstitutional. Supreme Court has said so. These are the deportations. Now, listen, I don't think that we should keep violent criminals who are here illegally in our country. But they do deserve due process. That's what our Constitution says. And a president doesn't get to wave a magic wand, declare himself king, appoint a billionaire overlord that no one voted for, dismantle our entire federal government, and in the process, do away with one of the single most important rights an individual possesses in functional democracies. And that is the right to have your case heard before a government locks you up or, I don't know, puts you on a plane and ships you to the one of the world's most violent prisons in El Salvador. Mark from Prairie du Sac, who's one of our regular callers and texters, sent me this. This is from the Declaration of Independence. Does this ring a bell? Do these sound like the principles and values we're living up to? He sent me this. This is what was written in our Declaration of Independence when we told Britain to go kick rocks. And why were we doing this? For these reasons. For imposing taxes upon us without our consent. Isn't that what Trump is doing by not involving Congress? These tariffs were such a great idea, then convince Congress and pass legislation to do them. Instead of making up new law for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered with a repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Huh? Ring any bells? I want to listen to Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, who went to El Salvador today to try to speak with, to get proof of life of Abrego Garcia, who was wrongfully disappeared in the middle of night by Trump's thugs, denied due process unconstitutionally, and then sent to one of the world's most violent prisons in El Salvador, which I'm starting to think he might have died in. Let's take a listen.
Listen to President Trump and the Trump administration, you would think that the U.S. courts have found that Mr. Abrego Garcia is part of MS-13, but in fact, they have not found that. In fact, recently, a U.S. federal court judge said that the Trump administration did not have evidence to support the claim that he had ever been part of MS-13. I want to emphasize that President Trump and our Attorney General Pam Bondi and the Vice President of the United States are lying when they say that Abrego Garcia has been charged with a crime or is part of MS-13. That is a lie.
Sounds a little familiar. I think I explained this yesterday, that those are all lies, that no court has ever reached a legal conclusion, that he is a gang member. That has never happened. No one has ever adjudicated him a criminal for any infraction at all. He's not a terrorist. He was a married father of three who is a union member who went to work every day, who had an order entered by a federal judge that said he should not be deported. That's who we're talking about. A guy who is in his car with his five-year-old special needs son when ICE thugs disappeared him. So, again, Senator Van Hollen was in El Salvador today trying to talk with this man to confirm that he is alive and breathing, and El Salvadorian officials refused him that entry, that visit. Remember, Kristi Noem, you know, who's been playing dress up with all her, she dresses up like a firefighter, but she's still got the long flowing locks. I'm digressing, but we got her into the prison. She got to see prisoners, but they can't admit Senator Van Hollen to talk with Mr. Garcia, whom the Supreme Court said shouldn't have been deported, that he was unconstitutionally deprived of his due process rights, that the Trump administration should do everything to facilitate his return, but they've done nothing, as held by Judge Innes today in a hearing, who has now is requiring expedited discovery and may require Trump administration officials to sit for depositions so they can be asked under oath with the penalty of perjury hanging over their head. What have you done? Have you called anyone? Is there an email? Did you email anybody? We all watched Donald Trump yesterday sit with the president of El Salvador, himself an authoritarian, didn't once ask him, hey, can you get Mr. Garcia back? The Supreme Court, you know, that co-equal branch of government thing. They told me I should probably ask. Didn't happen. Senator Van Hollen also said this: there's no evidence the Trump administration is complying with the court order. He was told that the embassy in El Salvador has received no information from the Trump administration to facilitate, quote unquote, Abrego Garcia's release. He stated that the administration is clearly in violation of the court order. He wasn't able to see Mr. Garcia. They won't even guarantee him a visit with him next week. They wouldn't even get him a phone call. They said they would get him a phone call if the U.S. Embassy had simply asked for that. But the Trump administration didn't ask for the senator to be able to talk to Mr. Van Hollen. Excuse me, to Mr. Garcia. Why not? Why not? Can you facilitate a phone call, for crying out loud? Facilitate a call. Let's start with that, shall we? Unbelievable. Cam from Appleton on the text lines hypothesizing that Mr. Garcia may be dead. That may be a reason why they're not, you know, facilitating his release or facilitating a stinking phone call or facilitating, well, anything. They're not doing anything. This happening today, and just hours ago, Judge Boasberg, so we got Judge Innes on the specific case that is Mr. Abrego Garcia. We got Judge Boasberg that is overseeing the case that is generically about the nearly 250 people that were disappeared in the middle of the night, stuck on planes in violation of that judge's order, and disappeared to an El Salvador prison, which is one of the most violent places on planet Earth. He's overseeing that case. He found today that there is probable cause, not just that the Trump administration has committed civil contempt. He's also found probable cause that the government engaged in willful disregard of a court order and that they may have committed criminal contempt. Criminal contempt is an intentional act that interferes with judicial process. It is a crime. It carries penalties like fines and imprisonment. It also covers reckless acts, not just intentional act, but reckless acts that end up undermining a court order. I think that might meet the standard here. It was reckless to let the third plane take off after he gave the order, wasn't it? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Charles from Milwaukee, you're up next, sir.
Good afternoon, Maggie. I actually think this guy is dead. I don't think he's alive anymore. I believe that there are a few of those men that have probably passed away.
Yeah, like this guy and the gay makeup artist. I'm sorry. Can you imagine being in a prison that holds thousands of people? They're held in these like mass cells with like these tiers of cots, and you're a gay makeup artist. Committed no crime. You find yourself there with some of the most violent criminals in El Salvador. I'm sure that person's totally okay. It's crazy, Charles. It's crazy.
I don't understand it. And I don't understand his supporters like it because, well, this is what he said he's going to do. He's going to get these brown people out of our country. His goal is to try to make this country a white country, but it's never been a white country, and he'll never be able to stop the browning of it. White women aren't having babies like they used to back in the farm days. That's not happening.
Well, that's why there's this whole contemporaneous. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening, Charles. Love seeing you on my caller list, sir. That's why there's this whole Theobro movement. Okay? This is like the trad wife, the traditional wife, the Theobros. It's like, oh, we're going to create a Christian nationalist, which is white nationalist enclaves in rural populated areas. Women will return to their, quote, traditional read, no job. You belong in the bedroom and the kitchen. Trad wife roles so that they have babies. To repopulate the white race. I mean, it's all part of a whole here. I mean, you got a gay makeup artist. There's another guy out of Texas who they also admit was deported mistakenly. Okay. Oops, that guy shouldn't have gone. This dude doesn't even have a tattoo they can make an argument about. The gay makeup artist, oh, he had a tiger tattoo. Well, that was the symbol of the town he grew up in. Another guy had an autism awareness tattoo that got the deportation rep. Oops, sorry, no due process rights for you. Goodbye. There's another person, no tattoos, can't BS a fig leaf about that. Can't have a cop swear out a bogus declaration saying, oh yes, we've confirmed that he's an MS-13. Remember, no, you haven't. You confirmed that he has a tattoo. By the way, aren't tattoos speech? Why isn't that protected? I've been going on a bit. We're going to take Fred's call from Cottage Grove. And if you want to talk about your favorite college town, I got to move on to something positive. We got to go into the afternoon this Wednesday, hump day, with a little bit of positivity. I'm going to share a great story with you. If you want to share your favorite college town with us, and why? Give us a buzz or text us 855-752-4842 over the hump and Trump when we come back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government
buy-in for the people. In 2024, a ballot measure to throw out Ohio's dysfunctional, politician-led redistricting process had its description rewritten by state officials to sink it. Now, Ohio officials are trying to sink two more measures they don't like, and the U.S. Supreme Court is now involved. Some background. Ohio's fair and truthful ballot measure requirements allows the state to modify a ballot measure's description to make it more accurate for voters. But can it use that authority to manipulate the process and block citizens from moving their ballot measure forward? Organizers tried for 2 years to get the language okayed to gather signatures for the Protecting Ohioans' Constitutional Rights measure, giving citizens the private right to sue the state and removing the qualified immunity that police and government officials are currently given. While organizers have acted in good faith, Federal District Court Judge Karen Nelson Moore wrote that Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost rejected the proposed amendment language 8 times and found the reasons dubious. The 3-judge panel ruled 2-1 that Ohio was restricting organizers' speech and must approve the measure's description. But April 9th, Yost appealed to Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh for an emergency stay of the Sixth Circuit's order, which Kavanaugh immediately granted despite the sketchy circumstances. We'll continue to watch this situation. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabe, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back, everybody. Listen, if I got you all fired up with our discussion about Mr. Abrego Garcia, I apologize. Please know I'm going to do a much deeper dive tomorrow with Tom Paulswist. He'll be in the guest co-host chair with me. We're going to have plenty of time to dig deep on this. We'll have plenty of time to take all of your calls. I think it's really important for us to engage and take a look, a hard look at what is going on, including, and we will share these with you tomorrow, Donald Trump's statements that he wants to start deporting citizens, sending us to foreign prisons. How long did that take? I don't know, like 85 days, less than 3 months into Trump 2.0. We will cover all of that and so much more tomorrow with Tom P. in the co-host chair with me. But as I like to do, especially on Wednesdays, as we close up the show, we call this segment Over the Hump and Trump, trying to talk about hopefully something positive that is less politics, because we all need to catch our break, our breath and take a break from all of that. And I came across a really fun story that came out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel just this past Monday. That according to a new report from Rent Cafe, Wisconsin has one of the best college towns in the United States. And it may surprise you which college town that is, unless you were a fortunate attendee of this fine university. Analysts at Rent Cafe used 12 different metrics across 3 categories to rank towns. And they had population like minimums and limits, right? Because you pick, you know, Columbia University or NYU in New York. It's like, well, New York's awesome, but is that a college town? I'd say probably not. So here were the population minimum had to have 10,000 people, maximum population of 30,000, and this is important here, student population had to be at least 10%. Of the total population. Okay, so that's the hook. And then they used a few other population related factors. They had 235 eligible candidate towns, And then they looked at affordability, livability, green space, graduation rates, tuition, housing costs, whole bunch of different things. They had 12 different metrics that they looked at. And I bet you wouldn't have guessed this unless you were fortunate enough to attend this fine university. The University of Wisconsin at Platteville. Platteville. Top 20. Came in number 20 on the ranking of 235 college towns. I think this is so cool. I spent some time in Lafayette, Indiana. West Lafayette, Indiana was 19. And I'm going to say, no. You could not pay me to attend Perdue University. I am not going to Boiler Mank in West Lafayette, Indiana. It is the middle of nowhere. I don't think it's a good, fun college town. Also on the list, Bozeman, Montana, coming in at number one. So surprising to me. College Station, Texas, you know that one. Amherst in Massachusetts. It's a good list, and you can check out all the metrics. We'll put the website where you can find all that in our show notes for today. But do any of you have a favorite Wisconsin college town? And if so, why? 855-752-4842. I have been very fortunate in that I got to attend Wisconsin's two largest universities. I attended Marquette University. I was fortunate enough to get a full ride there. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Marquette. And not for my athletic prowess. Nope. This was for being a big old nerd. So I got to attend Marquette, which is located right in the heart of Milwaukee. And I also attended the University of Wisconsin Law School. So I'll just say this about my Marquette experience. I loved going to an undergraduate school in a large urban city. I think if I had gone anywhere else that wasn't in that kind of environment, I would have been really bummed. I grew up in a city, and I love the proximity to all the things that you want to do that aren't, you know, like go to a bar or go to the sporting events of the school. I love those things, too. Don't get me wrong. But I like to have options, you know, like other things to do as well. I also loved the fact that Marquette, being in Milwaukee, was so close to the lakefront. That was my run route, was from Marquette down to the lakefront and around the lagoon. If you are a Milwaukeean, you know what I'm talking about. That was my route back when I was in college. What I loved most about Madison was the complete lack of any urban environment. It was the isthmus being by two lakes. Loved the terrace. I logged a lot of outers on Madison's terrace. So beautiful. And I especially liked the walk that I had to the law school building. I hated Bascom Hill, going up Bascom Hill with like 80 pounds of law books. Not fun, but I liked the walk. It was very beautiful, very picturesque. I used to live on Pinckney Street. If you're listening to me on WMDX, that was my old stomping grounds. Loved the walk. It got me set for the day. But perhaps most notably, having attended Marquette University for both my undergrad and first graduate degree, I really loved going to Kendall for some Badger games. I didn't have the football experience at Marquette, so I definitely did a little jump around back in the day when I was at UW Law School. Check out that list. I'm going to have to go visit Platteville. Top 20 best college towns in the country. Kudos to you, UW Platteville, and the Platteville community. That's going to do it for me today. I'll be back with Tom Paulswitz. We'll dig more into Judge Boasberg and Trump's open defiance of court orders. The constitutional crisis is here, and it is real. You've been listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
News from the Center, WRCE. Jane Mattner and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, legal issues continue surrounding the man deported to El Salvador. Jim Santel will join us. Don't miss it.
Mattner on air, weekday mornings at 10.
At National Geographic Society, we believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. California has filed suit against President Trump's tariff policy.
California is the first state to sue over President Trump's sweeping tariffs announced earlier this month. Governor Gavin Newsom said no state is poised to lose more than California due to the impact of the tariffs on U.S. trade partners.
This is recklessness at another level.
The White House, in a statement, dismissed the lawsuit, saying Newsom should be focused on issues like crime, homelessness, and unaffordability in his state. Karen Travers, ABC News, the White House.
Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says tariffs will likely generate at least a temporary rise in inflation. Volatility returned to Wall Street on those remarks. Stocks sank due to economic instability. The Justice Department filing a federal sex discrimination lawsuit against the state of Maine, accusing that state of violating Title IX. The DOJ challenging the state's policy regarding transgender athletes competing in girls' and women's sports. This is ABC News.